Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, my name is Sarah Utoff, and we are listening to Trundlebed Tales. This is the podcast about Laura Ingalls Wilder, historic foodways, one-room schools, and other social history. I'm the creator of Trundlebed Tales, and find us all around the web under Trundlebed Tales on your social media favorite social media platform. If you listen or just have an account on iTunes, please leave positive feedback because that helps people find the show. This is episode 85 of Trundlebed Tales, and it is going to be an interview with Nancy Copel of the South Dakota State Historical Society Press. Now, unfortunately, we are having a little bit of trouble calling out, but hopefully she will be calling in here in a minute. So, in the meantime, I think it's time for a little housekeeping.
But if you hear that sound, which is the noise made by washing metal plates in a metal wash tub on the stove, then you know it's time for a little housekeeping. And here on Trundlebed Tales, our housekeeping means giving you the information you may need about the show. If you ever want to listen to an episode live, but you don't want to just stream it through the computer, you can call in at 714-242-5253. That's 714-242-5253. Or toll free 1-877-633-9389. That's toll free 1-877-633-9389. You can also use those same numbers to call in and ask a question and otherwise be on the show. Just make sure that you hit 1 when they ask you to so the little symbol comes up and I know you have a question so that you want to talk. Anytime you're streaming an episode, you can also join in the chat room. Unless there's some technical issue, I always open it up.
And we're just going to check here. Nancy, is this you?
It's me, yes.
Oh, great. Now I'm going to put you back in the green room for just a second here and finish the housekeeping, and then I will be right back with you.
Okay.
All right. In addition for following up our housekeeping, we have another episode coming up next week on a Thursday, the 23rd. At 8 p.m. Central Time, we are going to be talking with Lynn Belusco, who is, among other things, she's the head of the Jell-O Museum, but her family is having a sugar bush for maple syrup making for a couple of generations. And so she's going to talk to us about the history of maple syrup, just like Laura talks about in Little House in the Big Woods. Also, coming up on my presentation schedule, we've got one for me this month. I'm going to be in State Center, Iowa, which surprisingly is in the exact center of the state. And I'm going to be doing In the Kitchen with Laura at the Gutenist. It's the public library in State Center. And then I have a couple programs coming up in April. April 6th, we're going to be doing In the Kitchen with Laura at the Clinton Women's Club. And April 18th, I'm going to be doing In the Kitchen with Laura at the Des Moines Public Library Central Branch. And I've got a couple of one-room school programs for actual schools coming up, and that's April. So I think that is all our housekeeping. So I'm going to go ahead and finish up. And I am going to give Nancy a big thank you for being flexible and calling in. I don't know what the trouble was. I tried on the cell phone and through the computer, and it wouldn't let me through. So thank you so much for calling in.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay. Now, we are going to be talking about a couple things with Nancy today. She is a person involved in one of my very favorite home site stories. And we're also going to talk about Pioneer Girl, which she helped publish, and what everybody, I hope, has on their calendar already, the Laura Ingalls Wilder Conference in April, which I personally have been looking forward to for an entire year. So I hope you are too, which is now open for registration. So before we get going and all that, Nancy, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I was born and raised in Mitchell, South Dakota, which is about 70 miles south and west of DeSmit. So I've been, Laura Ingalls Wilder's been close to me both geographically and I suppose literarily and emotionally for most of my life. I am, at this point in time, the director of the Research and Publishing Program and the South Dakota State Historical Society Press of the South Dakota State Historical Society, and also director of the Pioneer Girl Project, which are all intertwined things.
Well, I have to say, if anybody has not dealt with the South Dakota State Historical Society, I went to the conference last year, and I was thoroughly impressed. I mean, I was used to Iowa's system, and South Dakota is better organized. I'm sorry, I have friends in Iowa State Historical Society, but truth is truth, and really, it seems to be a phenomenal system, and the conference was great, so I'm really looking forward to that. And But before we get into that, how was there some specific way you got interested in Laura other than being so close to her geographically?
Well, I think like many people that get introduced to Laura, I was introduced by a grade school teacher reading the started with The Long Winter, reading it after lunch I believe it was the fifth grade, and that just started me down the path. I went to the library and got all the rest of the books, and I actually wrote about a blog about this, which you can find on the Pioneer Girl pioneergirlproject.org website. So if anybody's interested.
Well, I'll look up the link and put it on the show notes when I go ahead and get this written up for the blog.
Okay, great.
So one of my all-time favorite Laura Ingalls Wilder home site stories is the finding of Ma and Pa's portraits in DeSmet. And I had always heard the story, and when I found out that you were the actual person who found them, I was so excited. I was geeking out the same way I geeked out when I saw the Walnut Grove High School gym where the first pageant was. So could you tell us that story in your own words?
Well, I can tell you what I remember of it. This story goes back to the 1980s when I was editing South Dakota History magazine and working with Bill Anderson, who we did a couple of his articles in South Dakota History based on his master's thesis. And he had told me that he was pretty sure that the charcoal portraits of Ma and Pa were at the South Dakota State Historical Society. And I said, boy, I've never seen them. I asked the state archives if they were aware of them, and they were not. And so I just told Bill, I said, I'll keep an eye out for them as I'm looking. Because as the editor of South Dakota History back in the day, I was a staff of one. So I was busy, I was always looking for photographs within the society to illustrate the magazine. So what I did was, you know, go through the photographs fairly frequently, but I had never seen these photographs. But then I discovered one time when I was looking, I think, for military photographs, that there was another oversized cabinet up in the library that also had photographs. So I was up there to look for something completely different, and I opened either the first or the second drawer of this cabinet, and there sat Ma and Pa. And so it was an exciting moment for me, and exciting for Bill when I told him, and Bill then arranged to have the Loringles Wilder Memorial Society and DeSmit copy the photographs so that they could hang them in the Ingalls home where they originally hung many, many years ago.
And the cool part is they weren't labeled, right? You just saw them and knew that was Ma and Pa.
Nobody had ever labeled those. Nobody, the family had never put anything on them. And if the museum had put on it, what I'm suspecting they might have done is put a paper label on them. And I don't know if you know about those paper labels, but they have a limited life. And they were gone by that time. So
yeah, if you're lucky, they've fluttered down in the same box.
Exactly.
And that they're still eligible. Well, that's
right.
Another question.
Right.
And I just love that part, that you just saw them and knew that was Ma and Pa. I just love that to death.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it took somebody who knew. That's absolutely right.
Now, I want to kind of move on and talk about Pioneer Girl a bit. And I will tell you that my personal history as Pioneer Girl was I found out about it, and I'm not sure if it was a foreword or an afterword in one of the books that Roger Lee McBride had arranged to be published. And it said that Pioneer Girl was coming out in 1984. So I waited and I waited, and it was January 1st, 1984. And I was just, I couldn't wait. There was going to be Pioneer Girl was coming out to be published. And I was so excited, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and nothing happened in 1984. And there were about two other times when you heard stories that it was coming out, and I got all excited, and nothing happened. So I must admit, I did not believe you when you said you were going to publish Pioneer Girl.
Yeah.
I figured it was waiting till I died before it came out. So that was a long wait. So tell us, how did it finally end up working out? How did you come to publish it?
Well, you know, I have to say that Bill Anderson is the person who knows the story of the 1980s, which he's going to share with people at the history conference. So stay tuned. But the story of Pioneer Girl from our perspective really starts in at the end of 2005, when the press commissioned an autobiography, or not an autobiography, but a biography of Laura Ingalls Wilder, which from Pamela Smith Hill, which we published in 2007. And we also sponsored a research trip for Pam to the Hoover. And it was at the Hoover that she, you know, was able to access the typescripts of Pioneer Girl, and she overheard a conversation. She's told this story many times, but she overheard a conversation with one of the curators there with a fan on the phone about Pioneer Girl, and afterward he said that that was the single most requested thing from their Loringles Wilder papers. And so she and I started talking about this, I suppose.
I'm going to interrupt you just a second. In case anybody doesn't know, the original of the typescript is held at the Hoover Presidential Library. And the reason it hadn't been published, you could get it from the Hoover, but their copying rates are set by Washington, D.C. These are not Midwest copy rates. So it's like 50 cents a page. So to get Pioneer Girl, it was a major, major thing. You had to really be a fan. So it has been out there a long time, heavily used by a lot of scholars, but it was relatively inaccessible.
You know, you could get copies. They were expensive. I don't know if they were any more expensive than the book itself in the end, but yeah, you could get copies, but it was not easy. And just to follow up what you're saying a little bit, the original handwritten copy of Pioneer Girl is in Mansfield, and the typescripts, of which there are at least three, are at the Hoover.
Okay, so she'd heard a conversation, and they said it was the most requested article.
Right. Document would be, yeah. Yes, they did. And so she would said to me on a number of occasions, you know, I really think we need to think about, you know, publishing this this Pioneer Girl. And I said, you know, yeah, I agree. You know, I think that's a good idea. And we talked about how you might do that. Would it be at which copy of it would you go for? You know, so we discussed things like that. Which copy? Would you do the original? Would you do the buy copy? And the buy copy is the most polished one that actually circulated in the 1930s to publishers. So which one would you publish? And so we talked about this for a couple of years, actually, on and off. And then finally in 2009, I said, you know, it's time to, let's get serious about this. And I asked Pam to put her ideas on paper. And then I took the I created a production concept and a financial package and took that to the trust. And they decided that the time was right. And then I think the thing that probably gave a lot of people who knew that it was about to be published in 1984, was supposed to be published in the 80s, pause, is that it took us a year, almost 2 years longer than we originally estimated that it would take. So I think people thought, oh, no, here we go again. Because we originally came out with the concept. We were very hopeful. I think the whole thing was bigger than we really realized. But we were very hopeful that we would get it out in 2013 originally. And you know, we'd started at the end of 2010, so it seemed doable. But in the end, it just wasn't doable. So
go ahead.
I was just going to say it was just much more work than we thought, and you know, much more research than we anticipated. We wanted to do it as thoroughly as we could, and that just took a lot of time.
So one of the features of the book is, if anybody hasn't read it or seen it, it is Laura's text, but there are also a lot of annotations in it. Who did those annotations?
Well, that was kind of a team effort. Pamela Smith Hill, who's the editor of the volume, of course, did many of them. But the editors of the Pioneer Girl Project also did a lot of the fundamental research and writing of some of the annotations. All of the newspaper research, for example, was done here. Much of the government document research, much of the census research, just things of that sort, were the preliminary research was done here in Pierre, where much of the documentation is.
Were the home site museums involved?
You know, they were, and they were excellent partners in this enterprise. They were involved in a number of different kinds of ways. They were a source of information in terms of photographs, original documents, letters, the documentation of, you know, the Memorial Society in DeSmit, for example, has a lot of documentation related to Charles Ingalls career in life. And
that's all right. We all call him Pa.
Yeah. So, I mean, they were exceedingly open and generous with that material. And they have been excellent partners in helping us get the word out after the fact, once the book was out, and in being enthusiastic supporters of the book. So we just couldn't ask for better partners than they've been.
Now, with the rollout of publications, there was, I think, what only can be described as a tidal wave of interest. When did you first suspect sales were going to be stronger than you expected? Usually academic books don't do that.
No, they truly don't. And, you know, we agonized a lot about how many to put out in the first printing. We had originally always worked with the figure of 5,000 as the first print run. And when we could tell as we were, you know, as the book was in production, you know, there were some AP stories, there was starting to be interest. So by the time we actually ordered the first printing, we had about 7,000 pre-orders, which told us, of course, what we needed to do more than 5,000. So we doubled that and did the first print run was 15,000. And within 2 weeks, within 2 weeks, we'd ordered a second printing. So, I mean, we knew right away after it was out that it was going to be big.
So what was the frenzy like from the inside? I mean, you started having articles rolling out and national publications, and I think people were kind of demanding, judging by the comments I saw of people online, because, you know, the Amazon didn't fulfill,
right,
you know, for months.
Right. Well, we just really, Amazon, I don't really know how that happened, but Amazon didn't really have a significant order in until, you know, or at least not one that we were aware of until late in the game. And I think, frankly, the book just caught everybody unaware. And it was, you asked the question of what was it like on the inside. Well, it was exciting, but it was also pretty frenzied. You know, we didn't have any more staff or any more hours in the day than we had before, and we were dealing with this blockbuster that we couldn't ship out fast enough, couldn't get printed fast enough. And so it was, somebody said, what a great problem to have. Yeah, it was a great problem to have. But, you know, once in a while, my staff would just say, I'm done. I'm not going to package one more book this week. So it had its ups and downs. It was also, you know, frightening in the sense that the bigger the order we would put in, the third printing, for example, was for 45,000. That's just huge. And, you know, when you think about the book industry, which your big distributors have up to 4 months to pay for the books they order, you're really working with a negative in terms of income coming in and income going out. So if there were times when it was just flat out scary.
So are sales still coming in? It's been a couple years since the book came
out.
Yes,
actually, they are. It's stayed really pretty. You know, I mean, it's like any book. It's fallen off. The first year is the big year for book sales, and then they trail off. And it has trailed off. But it still sells, and it still sells strongly compared to all of our other titles. So it is.
Now, I didn't warn you I was going to ask this, but do you have an approximate number of the copies you sold?
I do have an approximate number. It's about 160,000 at this point.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep, those are sold and paid for. 160,000. There are still some that are sold but not paid for. We don't talk about those yet. So,
is that more than your other books put together?
Pretty much, yeah, I would say so. You know, we've had some nice sales. We have some kids' books that do very well. Our biography series, of which Lauren Ingalls Wilder, A Writer's Life, is a component of that. That series does very well, and that book has done very well. But nothing to this scope or scale. It's just really wonderful.
I like the L. Frank Baum book about the little gopher. That's so cute.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
That's the guy who wrote Wizard of Oz, if you're listening and don't know. It's coming in so popularly that you're planning a series of follow-ups. So tell us something about them.
Well, the first follow-up, it will come out in May, and it's called Pioneer Girl Perspectives, Exploring Laura Ingalls Wilder. And what this is a book about Wilder. It's not by Wilder. It's a book of essays where 9 different, I think 10 different authors talk about Laura Ingalls Wilder. And, you know, I asked them actually to address the question of what Pioneer Girl brings to the table in terms of understanding the career of Laura Ingalls Wilder. I asked them to try and give some reason for the enduring success of Laura Ingalls Wilder. And the resulting book, I think you're going to enjoy quite a bit. And the speakers for the authors of those essays are the speakers at the history conference this year.
So you've done this one with the Pioneer Girl Perspectives. That's almost out. What I think you have a couple more planned. Any word on them yet?
Yes, there will be at the conference. That's one of the things we'll unveil at the conference, is where we go from here.
Okay, so everybody needs to come.
Exactly.
All right. So since we sort of brought it up, let's use that as a nice natural transition to talking about the conference.
Okay.
This is the yearly conference, the South Dakota State Historical Society. Now, it is an annual conference. So what's special about Laura this year is the theme. But before we get into the Laura part, I think maybe other years people might be interested in coming back. It really, sincerely, I would say that it was either the best, or at least in the top 3 best organized conferences I have ever attended. And I attend a lot of different conferences. So
they may want
to go another year. So can you tell us a little bit about what you normally expect in this conference, kind of how the layout and schedule works?
Mm-hmm, I can. The conference is, the State Historical Society has 5 different programming areas: museum, archives, archaeology, historic preservation, research and publishing. And I'm missing one, but or maybe not. But the
archaeology.
Archaeology, right? And the conference planning rotates among those specialty areas. This year, research and publishing is in charge. It was the 150th anniversary of Wilder. It just seemed like a natural of Wilder's birth. So it just seemed like a natural to do Wilder. Next year, the conference will be planned and managed by the archaeology program. So it's likely to focus on archaeology, anthropology, the early peoples of the region and the state, and that sort of thing. It'll be held in Rapid City, South Dakota. The year after that, I'm not sure who's in charge, but it'll come back to Pierre at that point, and I think it's either the museum or the archives that will be planning that meeting, and I don't know the theme yet. so can't help you there. But it'll probably be a more general theme dealing with something. We've had a number of different themes through the years. I can't remember what the theme was last year when you
food
came.
Food ways.
Yep, that was a good one. Food ways. We've done sports and recreation. We've done education. As interestingly as you can do education. Sorry. Just different topics, and the program that's in charge will pick the topics. So you just kind of have to watch it. But it's always been organized around two days. It actually, there's a pre-conference fundraising event on the Thursday before the conference gets started. This year we will be featuring this new book as a pre-release and a signing by all the authors at that event. Then the next morning we'll start bright and early at 8:45, I think it is, with a conference overview, and then we've set it up a little differently this year so that each of there'll be the 9 speakers that are going to speak mostly in pairs, on certain topics. But then we're going to do a series of panels so that we can look at, you know, specific questions such as Laura Ingalls Wilder's and Rose Wilder Lane's politics and how that affects their writing or doesn't affect their writing. We'll look at Laura Ingalls, Rose Wilder Lane, and whether she's editor, collaborator, ghostwriter. We're just going to explore Jen's with all these very people who have put a lot of thought into these questions. And so, and then, of course, we'll open it up to the audience for questions and give and take. So I think it's going to be a fun conference, frankly.
And let's just warn people who may be coming, because if you haven't gone to a conference before, sometimes you don't know some little things about it. And one thing is, I think it's the second day's lunch, there are awards that are given out.
That's correct. The first day's luncheon, we will have a conference speaker. In fact, it's going to be Noel Silverman, who is the counsel for the Little House Heritage Trust, and he will speak at that luncheon. But the second day, it is an awards luncheon for awards given out by the State Historical Society for historical for various people, such as the historical or the history teacher of the year, different kinds of things like that.
They all have to do with South Dakota history, not Laura stuff. So when they start saying awards, don't expect to have, you know, the best Laura blog post or anything like that.
Exactly. Exactly. We just haven't gone there.
Okay. Because, you know, I'd walk away with that one. But, okay. So, so that's kind of includes about how you kind of picked Laura and sort of what the theme is. So what are the dates of the conference?
It's the 27th through the 29th of April, 2017.
And where is it going to be held?
At the Holiday Inn City Center in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
And that is really a very nice thing. I'm glad you decided to do that because normally, as you mentioned, these conferences are held either in Pierre or over in Rapid City. And
right.
Those are quite a ways in for people not coming from South Dakota.
Right.
I think that might have increased attendance a little bit too. So, do you know if people are still looking at traveling in? What would be what you'd recommend the best way of how they get there?
Well, it depends. You know, there's. I'm not sure what you mean by that. Of course, there's an airport there, and Do you mean by
so they
love?
So they could just fly in. That's
right.
An option, because there is an airport, and the major highways or interstates coming in
would be I-29 north south and I-90 east west. They cross right in Sioux Falls. So, and
it's sort of in the southeastern corner of the state, so it's pretty close, you know, to Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota. So I think that was a good choice to have the conference there.
Yeah, thank you. We thought so too. We also thought it would be a lot easier for getting speakers in at that point when we planned the conference. Pierre actually didn't have an airline that was serving it. It now does, so that's good for Pierre. But it was just much more convenient to try to get everything into Sioux Falls this time. So that's what we did. And it's also convenient to anybody who wants to take an extra day and visit DeSmit and Walnut Grove. They're both close.
Yeah, I did that last year, swung over to DeSmit. And I think it's really nice because most people go to DeSmit in the summer. And one thing about South Dakota as compared to Iowa or a lot of places east of and north of South Dakota is that it tends to be very dry, particularly where grass is cut short and a lot of people walk. So normally what you're walking on is pretty much dried grass. But in April, there's actual green grass, and I got some green grass pictures, and it was so nice to be able to do that. So I do recommend people take a chance to do that if they can. And I always tell people that unless you're going to be planning more trips back, that it is a good idea to try and hit DeSmit and Walnut Grove on the same trip, because they really are not all that far apart.
No.
You really have to go ways on 14 instead of 90, or at least I think that's the better way to go, but it still is very doable. And if you're planning a long trip that is or planning a trip that is not one that you're going to repeat very often, I think that would be a great time to go and sort of check things out.
Right. I agree.
And the crowds are going to be less too. They're pretty non-existent in April.
Yep, they are. So,
okay, so if we have now convinced everybody that they need to come, is it too late to register, and how do you register?
No, it's not too late to register. The conference is not huge, however, so we will be capping the online registration at 250, just so people know. And you register at history.sd.gov.
And how many registrants do you have so far?
You know, that's kind of a moving target, and I have not seen a count in quite a while, so I can't tell you that.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the speakers. You said these are the people who wrote in the essays in the book. So give us, who are some people we might have heard of and who are some people we might not have?
Okay. Well, Bill Anderson, of course, is someone you will have heard of. And he's talking about, as I say, about the backstory of Pioneer Girl, when people began to be aware of it and when they didn't, and so he will be here. Who else? Well, John Miller, who did a biography of Wilder, is also speaking.
We interviewed him last month, and he gave us a little bit of a preview. So looking forward to hear John.
Okay, good. So Caroline Frazier, who is the editor of the Library of America's 2-volume edition of the Little House books, will be here. She's written on, she's going to be talking about the Bloody Benders and that whole episode and what that means in terms of you know, the difference between fact and fiction and that sort of thing. Who else might you know? Sally Ketchum, who did a she did a biography of Wilder. She'll be speaking on fairy tales. I think that and Noel Silverman, like I said. Oh, and the other one you might know is Anne Romines, who did the book on constructing the little house, and she will be here. Some people you don't know that are going to be here are Michael Patrick Hearn, who is a independent scholar in New York City, and he did the annotated Wizard of Oz, the annotated Christmas Carol, the annotated Huckleberry Finn, and the Victorian fairy tale book, and he's going to be looking at Wilder and Wilder scholarship from the broader concept of of children's literature. Elizabeth Jameson is from the University of Calgary, is going to be talking about childhood, and specifically Wilder's childhood and how that fits into the American West. And that's really a fun essay, or it's going to be a fun talk. So Amy Mattson Louders, some people may know her because she did the Rediscovered Writings of Rose Wilder Lane, literary journalist. She's going to be talking about Wilder's extended career and her FBI encounters. And Paula Nelson's going to talk about, she's a professor emeritus in history, and she's going to be talking about Wilder, the history of women's rights in Wilder's era. And that's kind of it. And then me, of course, I'll be talking about a little bit of everything related to Wilder. So,
well, I as I say, I have been excited since I found out you guys are going to do Laura as a theme. And you mentioned that it kind of, the theme rotates around. Do you think you might do Laura again in the future at some point?
It's possible. I don't know that we would necessarily dedicate an entire conference to her, but we may, just like we did the time before, she may fit into a theme such as foodways, like that where you were on the program discussing foodways. And I can see, you know, she's been a feature in other conferences through the years. We did one, well, I think actually the very first conference we did was called There's No Place Like Home. And we talked about children's lit writers, generally speaking. So I would say that she will come in because she's such a big part of our history. So she will be, you know, she will feature in other people's topics. Will she again be the subject of a conference? You know, I can't anticipate that completely. It's possible we might do her again when we're in charge of the conference, just because we will have a number of new publications out at that point, and it might be a time to talk about and reassess what we're looking at. So I can't tell you for sure, but we try very hard. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and it probably depends if this is a sellout. It always, like with the Pioneer Girl itself, it always helps to show a lot of interest.
Exactly. Exactly.
So if somebody can't make it to South Dakota, or it didn't fit into their schedule at this time, or they've got a trip planned some other time, is there a way that you can get the information? Are you going to have, you mentioned that most of these speakers are going to be in the book, but is there going to be any way to get that specific, what they talk about at the conference?
You know, stay tuned. I don't know for sure. The book is, you know, the full content of what they wrote, as opposed to an abbreviated version of it, which is what the conference will be. The panels, you know, we haven't determined yet if we're going to videotape the whole thing or not. We'll be making that decision within the next couple of weeks here. So we've videotaped the conference in the past, and nobody buys them. So it's kind of a question of whether or not we think we have an audience for it or not.
Okay. Well, you can get last year's, and as Nancy mentioned, I was speaking on Laura Ingalls Wilder and Historic Foodways. It was all about different foodways, and you can buy the DVDs of those, which I did, and there's information about that on the blog.
So not nobody.
Yeah. And I'll link to that in the show notes for this episode too, the blog post where I talk about that. So if you want to see that conference, which I cannot say enough about, it was very well done. I really enjoyed it. And my mom, who came with me, said that it was the best conference she'd been to in a really long while too. So that's two strong endorsements, especially from my mom, because she's not easy to impress.
To please.
So yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah.
And just before we kind of move on from this, is there anything else that you'd like to say about the conference?
Well, there will be a reception on Friday night at which we will be featuring the Sergeant Creek Spring Band playing fiddle music. So that's another feature for people to think about. And I think that's about it. The other thing to know, I suppose, is that the Holiday Inn City Center is right in downtown Sioux Falls, and we picked that location because if people fly in, the whole area is walkable. You don't have to have a car downtown. So, I mean, you
okay.
can have a car downtown, but you can walk to the restaurants and the museum and different things, so.
Okay, well, that made me think of a couple more questions since I said, of course, that we were moving on. if they want to go to the opening or the pre-conference event, is that part of the registration too?
Yes.
Or
yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Will that be the only time that people will be signing the books?
No. There will be, I don't think we have that set up exactly yet, but there will be other opportunities during the conference.
Okay, well, that's good. If somebody wanted to add on the event, because the reception, they've already registered and they went pre-conference, and now they find out they're signing books, is there a way they can add it?
I think you can just add it when you get there at the conference if you haven't already signed up for it. I think you can probably go out and amend your registration too. I don't know the mechanics of that though.
Okay, and what about parking? If somebody's driving in, is there plenty of parking if they don't stay at the conference hotel?
That could get tough. Yeah. It's going to be city street. The hotel has a good sized parking lot. It's got a parking garage. I don't know how parking will be. I'm hoping it won't be a problem.
Okay.
I mean, if you're coming to the conference, you can park in the hotel parking lot. There's street parking as well, but I've seen it get full. So I guess that's why I'm a little bit hesitant about that. You might have to park a little bit away and walk. But it's, as I've said already, it's not all that bad a walk. Everything's walkable downtown. So
okay,
if you have to park a street over, you're not talking about that big a walk. So this is small town South Dakota after all. So.
Well, I think it's large town South Dakota, but that's still. I always get into I've gotten into discussions before where people talked about how small, like say Mansfield or DeSmet is, and you know DeSmet has two hotels and several bread and breakfasts and a campground. A small town in the Midwest means like broke, where you've got a museum and a couple houses, a couple churches, a cemetery, and a bar, and that's pretty much it. That's a small town.
This is
you're
right.
A lot bigger than that.
Sioux Falls is a lot bigger than that. Sioux Falls is about 150,000. So it's the largest city in South Dakota. It's a metropolitan area. It's got lots to see and do. There's some beautiful falls there, Falls Park, that's worth seeing. And you can walk, actually, from the hotel out to the falls. It's a hiking path. So it's... I don't think parking's going to be an issue.
Okay, good. The falls are quite lovely, and there's lots in Sioux Falls. And I will also point out to people who share my great love for Cracker Barrel, there is also a Cracker Barrel in Sioux Falls. So that is important to know. There's only three of them in Iowa, and I think Sioux Falls might be the only one in South Dakota.
I believe
so. Yeah.
Are
you
sure?
Is it still there? The sign was there the last time I went by, but that was last summer.
If it was last summer, I'm thinking it's probably still there.
I guess I will have to double check that for the show notes too. But I am a big Cracker Barrel person for Southern food. I really love it. So I get the fried okra and the turnip greens and all that.
Oh, wow.
So you don't think of that much for South Dakota, but that is your chance to Cracker Barrel.
Okay.
And since I said it was the last question before, I will certainly probably come up with another one. But just quickly, who do you see this conference pitched to? What sort of person are you expecting to come?
Well, that's a good question. What we always try to do in conferences and in publications is have you do cutting edge scholarship, but gear it to the general audience. So we're going to be talking to a general audience. I think this audience will be a little bit different because so many of the people, such as yourself, are very knowledgeable about Wilder and her ways. So there's probably a higher level of knowledge in the general conference audience than there might usually be. It's not geared to academics. It's a little bit different conference than last year. There's not as many. Last year there was some more anecdotal kind of thing going on. This is a little bit more based on scholarship.
Okay. Well, is there anything about Laura or Pioneer Girl or the upcoming book or the conference that you really want to talk about that you haven't gotten a chance to yet? Questions been so deep and penetrating that I have gotten everything that you possibly would want to say?
Well, I'm sure you haven't hit everything, but you did have a good question list. So I don't find myself thinking, I haven't talked about this or I haven't talked about that. There are things we're just simply not quite talking about yet, but we will be soon. And so, you know, maybe we can talk again after that.
Well, I would like that very much.
Okay.
So let's just do sort of hit the high points again for people coming. If you want to register for the conference, tell them again where you get that.
You go to you register online at history.sd.gov, G-O-V, so it's all lowercase, history.sd.gov.
And the registration form is online, so if you want to register, you're going to do it that way. They have registrations, or I didn't go back and double-check before I did this like I should, but the last time I looked, they had single-day registration or full conference. The pre-conference is a separate fee, and that is a fundraiser for the State Historical Society, so spend often and spend well. And if they still haven't gotten a copy of Pioneer Girl, where is the best way that they could do that?
Well, that would be to the way that's easiest is just to go to the the Pioneer Girl Project .org. It's all one word, Pioneer Girl Project .org, and you can order it right on that website. Or you can go to sdhspress.com, order it there. By this time, I don't know if your local bookstore should have it, but they may have to order it for you if they aren't stocking it anymore. Then I guess that's the quickest way to do all these things. So.
And you can also get them through the home sites, which also supports them, so that's a good thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, that is a good thing.
And then I forgot to say when we were finishing up about the conference, and the I didn't look to see the date when the block was going to be canceled, but I think that there's still rooms available at the conference rate.
Right.
At the hotel.
Right.
Which is always important. If you don't do conferences much, it is well worth it to be in the conference hotel. And they always do organize a cheaper rate than normal. So make sure you tell them that you are with the conference when you make your reservation.
Right.
All right. And then to flip back to books, because I'm being so organized here. When
you are.
When is the Pioneer Girl Perspectives, the release date? Is it out already?
No, it will be released to the public on May 18th, and it will be available pre-release at this conference only.
Can people pre-order it? That's another good reason to come to the conference if that's where you can get it. Can people pre-order it?
Yes, they can, and they can do that at the Pioneer Girl Project. .org or sdhspress.com, either one of those websites. You can pre-order it. I think I'm not sure if they might be able to order it at the discoverlaura .com from the DeSmit site. I think I've seen it up there. I'm not 100% sure, but it'd be worth checking to see if it's there.
And we're almost out of time, but we talked about the Pioneer Girl Project.org, and that, in case anybody hasn't checked it out, is a blog that sort of gave updates over the course of the publication process of Pioneer Girl, and you're still doing blog posts, right?
Yes, we are. There's several blog posts about the content of the Pioneer Girl Project or Pioneer Girl Perspectives book. So if you want a little preview of what we're going to be talking about, that's up there now in a series of blogs.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Nancy. Thank you for calling into. I don't know why it wouldn't let me call out to the number you gave me, but technology is great when it works. So
exactly.
So thank you for coming on, and I hope we can have you back sometime to talk about the books.
Okay. Thank you for asking me and giving the conference such a generous boost. So thank you.
So everybody else, remember that you need to come back and follow Trundlebed Tales, where we're going to have another episode coming on Thursday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. Central Time. And we are going to be talking with Lynn Belisco on maple syrup history and practice, just like Laura talked about in Little House in the Big Woods. So I hope you will join me again for that. We are continuing to work on having speakers and episodes on a regular basis. So I hope that you are enjoying it, and I will hear from you again. Remember to always brighten the corner where you are. Thank you.